Hello, friends. You may or may not know that I'm in South Sudan, in Africa, for a show called Go Back to Where You Came From for SBS. I have had some people express confusion about that title because it's obviously not where I come from, but it's a show about the refugee crisis enveloping the planet and what people like me, who were lucky enough to be born in Australia, should do to help. So it's on SBS tonight at 8:30 and on their on-demand streaming service. Please have a look, even if it's the sort of show you wouldn't normally watch. And to be honest, I get that. I don't normally watch these shows because they're hard and they're sad, and I get it. And I already think this way, and, you know, all of those cop-out reasons. But then I think, you know, I figure we're true crime fans because we aren't afraid to bear witness to the hard truths of the world. And this is definitely a true crime, and it's occurring right now. But for now, let's get on with the show. This week, we check in with a former guest called Will, whom we also called Mr. Ordinary when we spoke to him. He went to jail after an incredible coincidence at work seemed to give him the answer to his financial prayers. His life has moved on since then, but it's definitely changed directions in more ways than one.
Hello
there. Hey, Will, how are you?
Good, thank you. How are you going?
I am great, thank you. I'll just turn you up. It's so good to hear from you.
Thank you.
You know, people still talk to me so much about your episode.
Oh, really? Oh, wow, that's great.
And it's funny.
It's amazing to think it was 12 months. It's only 12 months.
And it's funny because obviously they don't talk to you about it because we used a fake name.
Yeah, that's right. Although I've had some contacts through the Facebook page that have just been incredible.
Wonderful. Great. So you did get some feedback.
Yeah. Sam got onto me through the podcast, didn't she? And that's why there's a book. But once the book came out, I've been corresponding for a little while now with a lady who's going to jail for fraud. And she was absolutely terrified when she first messaged me. And
We've
just been talking about, like, talked to her about her kids and how she's going with them. And then I talked to her about just practical stuff as well, like put $50 in your pocket sort of thing. It's been amazing.
God, that is amazing. Okay, so before we go any further, let's remind our listeners of why it is that so many people still say to me, hey, what about that one with that guy? You know, that guy who went to jail? And I always know they mean you. The episode was called Mr. Ordinary Goes to Jail.
I put myself in a terrible situation. I stole a good whack of money from the company that I was working for. It was around $300,000 over the period of about 18 months. And my wife at the time worked for the same company, so I put her career and her lifestyle in jeopardy as well. And it was all because we got in over our heads and a moment of temptation came along, and rather than do the right thing, I took the temptation. And the problem is once you do that once, you've broken your moral compass, and reality is it's easier to do it again.
And then I remember we talked, you know, at the end of the recording of that episode, and Emily and I were saying, oh, God, that's amazing. That should be a book. And lo and behold, a publisher got in touch with us asking for your details.
Yeah, that's right. About 3 weeks after, it was surreal and amazing. Somebody else, I think, got in touch with Emily first, a reporter from a less from a mainstream one, but she said to me, this person's details, but if I were you, I wouldn't ring them because I think they just want to do a beat up.
Okay.
And then, but then when she rang and said that the lady had called from Finch, she said, listen, this lady's legit, you really need to ring her. And I called Sam from Finch, and she asked me to send my journal, which, if you remember, we read a little bit of that on the first episode. And, after she had read it, she said, this is definitely, there's a book in this. Would you be willing to write us a book? And I find it amazing to think that I was on Australian True Crime in October last year. So it's not quite a year later. And they loved the name that you'd given to the episode. The journal never had a name, but they thought Mr. Ordinary Goes to Jail was a fantastic name for a book. And so that became the name of the book.
And it's out now.
And it is out now, yeah. It came out in July. I've just had a weekend up at the Brisbane Writers Festival talking all about it, and that was great, meeting some other writers and true crime writers. And the theme of that weekend was what the world needs now, and it was really nice to reflect on that and how my story fits into what I think the world might need now.
Yeah. So, okay, so you're not really anonymous anymore then. You were sitting on stage and talking.
Yeah, still sitting on stage talking, still using Will as my name.
Okay.
And so the book's written under that pseudonym, and obviously that's as much as anything to protect my little boy.
Yep.
Just keep him a step away from it. It was really getting the feedback out and the questions from the general public. It's amazing how quickly people go through the sort of, I would call it the voyeuristic part of, oh, tell me what happens in jail.
Yeah.
And they get to the heart of what the real issues are about people who go to jail and how we take care of them when they're in there and how we take care of them when they come home and those sort of things. And I feel really fortunate to be able to contribute to that conversation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Before we go on, can we ask how your son is? Because he came along to the recording last time. Beautiful kid. And, so how's he travelling?
He's travelling really well. Yeah, he's in high school now and he's doing really well. He's very proud of the book.
Yeah.
I have a game with him, which is accidentally found a good parenting trick, which is sometimes when he's on Fortnite, I'll grab his phone and I'll go through his internet browser history on his phone and take snapshots of the things that I think are funny. So he's looked up Will Patterson to see what comes up, but then he's looked up his own name but using the pseudonym surname to see if that'll come up too.
Oh.
It's because in the book his name's CJ, but he doesn't use CJ when he does the internet search. He uses his own name. Oh. It's very funny.
Has he found anything? Is he checking to see if he's been sort of unmasked?
Yeah, he's checking to see if he's famous too.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, you did raise that idea earlier of, like, it's, you know, it's cute now. But, you know, there was that moment where you were a parent going to jail and it was all unknown and terrifying and you're shameful. And now you're in touch with a woman who's about to go through that.
Yeah, one of the things I've been really fortunate with, I've had two things that I'd love to share with you. That lady contacted me through the Mr. Ordinary Facebook page, and she is going to jail for a fraud as well, a similar crime to mine. And she was absolutely terrified, and she's still very scared of the unknown.
Yeah.
And we've been able to have some really good, we're only chatting by message on Facebook, but we've had some really good heartfelt talks about, she's got some adult children and one of them refuses to speak to her because of the crime and how she, you know, can come to terms with that and give that child the space that they need to understand what it was that drove her. It's a really difficult, I think it was it you guys that had the, you had a person on who works with that group that supports kids of people who are inside, and they sometimes, there's quite a strong group in Victoria that take kids to visit their parents in prison if they can't get there themselves. They have buses, and I've been chatting to those guys as well about maybe getting involved in helping support them, because I was really lucky, and a lot of people aren't lucky in terms of having an ex-wife who was very supportive of me continuing my relationship with my son.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that don't have that.
No, there'd be there'd be a lot of other parents who would just refuse to take them there.
Yeah, that's right. And or they just can't.
Yeah.
They've lived alongside this person with a life of crime, and now the person's in jail, and so they have no way to support themselves. They might not have a car.
Yeah.
They might not, you know, they just can't get their kids there. And I think that some of the great stuff that's coming out of, you know, everything that started off with just that podcast was, it is the chance to actually get involved in some of these things.
Yeah.
And really, really feel fortunate. But I had the joyful thing of, I did an interview after the book came out for ABC in Western Australia.
Mm.
And the weekend after that happened, I got a phone call. I'm like, you know, hi, this is Will. Hello, my name's Dorothy. I'm like, hello. And so Dorothy's in her 80s and she'd heard my interview and she wanted to tell me, you sound like a very nice young man. And my husband was in the brig when he was in the Navy, so I just want you to know it happens to everybody. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It was such a delight, Michelle. Oh, it was. I chatted probably to her for about 15 minutes and she wanted to know where to get the book. And at the end of it, I said to her, how did you get my number? She said, I rang the radio and didn't take no for an answer.
Oh, wow.
I said, I'll bet you did too, you darling. You're
resourceful. Yeah, I went and visited a couple of prisons a few months ago now as part of their book club. I went to Castlemaine. And
yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, and then I mentioned it on, I think, ABC radio or somewhere a few days later. And then similarly, a lady in her 80s tracked me down through my management, right? So they get a phone call and this lady says, you know, she wants to pass on a message to me, which is that her son is in that prison and she lives miles away in Rosebud or somewhere, long, long way away, and she really struggles to get there and to visit.
Yeah.
So she wanted to thank me for visiting because she doesn't get to.
Yes.
You know, yes. And it makes you realise that, you know, whatever you think of people who end up in jail, they've got innocent families who are suffering as well.
Yeah, and the mental health, mental health in society now is such a commonly talked about thing.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the mental health of people in prison. I was listening to the radio yesterday and they were talking about a report that's just come out about the dangers of solitary confinement.
Oh, yeah.
And but the mental impact, I wasn't in jail for an enormous amount of time. 9 months isn't that long, but sometimes it's an eternity.
Mm.
And the big thing that's changed in me is I don't like groups of people.
Mm.
And it's something that I am finding really hard to shake. But people, I think if not for all of the support and the visits and all that sort of stuff, there's a guy, I can't remember if I told you the story about him, but there was a guy who I've nicknamed Tractor, who came to my cell one night when we were at Beechworth. And after I'd invited him in, because you always invite someone into your cell, they had come in unless they're invited. He handed me an envelope and said, read this. And okay, and I opened it up and it was a letter from his son. And he goes, you're smart, Saddlebags, because that was my nickname.
What?
And I said, look, I do all right, mate. And he goes, no, you're smart and I don't got words. And I'm like, oh, okay, Tractor, so can you read it? And he looked at me just for a split second and this guy was huge and I thought, oh, I'm about to get my nose broken by my mouth because I've asked him if he can read.
Yeah.
And he can obviously read, but he can't write. And he goes, I can read, I just don't got words, and you've got words. I'm like, okay, so do you want me to help you write a letter back to your son? Yep. So it turned out his son, who was 9, had been writing to him with the help of his mum for 4 years, and he'd never written a letter back
because he couldn't write. Yeah.
And because he was ashamed of that and he didn't want to have the conversation, he had never let them visit.
Oh, my God.
So we, yeah, so over the course of a week, we wrote letters back to his gran and to his son and to his wife. And about a month later, he did the paperwork to let them come and have visits. And, like, it's such a simple thing, but it changed his whole outlook on it doing his time.
Yeah.
He went from someone that would push back against the system all the time to someone who was quiet and peaceful because he knew at the end of that month somebody was coming to see him and he didn't want to mess it up.
Yeah.
It just... That you know, you're going to just spend time and give your time to visit people in jail, but having someone who cares about you sit down and talk to you is such a powerful thing in that situation.
Well, yeah, I mean, when I was out there, a man said to me he can't read. He was like in his 50s or something, and I was sort of really touched that he told me. You know, I thought, wow, that's a really big thing to just tell a stranger.
Yeah.
And then we ended up.
Right.
We ended up having this really great conversation. I was telling him about the Naz Campanella, the newsreader from Triple J, who's blind, and she uses this incredible software to do the news because she also has this thing where she can't read Braille even. But
oh, wow.
Yeah. So she has to use this software. But as a kid, it took them years to figure that out. And a lot of teachers accused her of being naughty or lazy or whatever. And so she actually never learnt to read or anything until she was, you know, well in her teens. And I was saying, you know, to him, it's never too late, basically. And, you know, and he was like really into her story. So, yeah.
What is he going to do when he gets out? The world is all Facebook and internet. And like it's all text and pictures and, you've got to be able to work your way out through it somehow or otherwise. Guess what? You're going to end up back in jail because it's easier, it's safer.
Oh, and also it's like, well, of course he ended up in jail. Like what else?
Yeah.
I just felt like, oh, God, where else would you be, you poor thing?
What else did you have?
Yeah
exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. And that's the whole guts of it. Like, like I don't want to let this chat pass without thanking you and Emily so much for taking a risk. Emily was kind enough to launch the book for me, and she told the story of me getting in contact with you from your point of view, which I'd never heard, which was some bloke who's admitted to being a criminal has just contacted us and said, why don't I come in and have a chat with you? And you two had to sit down and go, well, what's the worst that could happen here? Like, are we going to take a punt? And it turned out all right, you know. But somehow you sort of captured the essence of what I think is the universal truth about prison, which is a lot of people in there are ordinary.
Yes, well, that's definitely my belief, is that there are no monsters in the world, and there's a hell of a lot of people in prison who are probably in a lot of ways really good people who, you know, made mistakes or life's just kind of led them in a direction. And I always think it's probably a lot easier to end up in jail than we think too.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah. And I mean, look, what I did was entirely my fault, and I entirely deserved to end up in prison for what I did. Like it was appropriate. I was in with a young fella who was openly homosexual. He was in for a drug charge. He volunteered to hold all his mates' drugs at a rave sort of thing, and the police happened to tap him on the shoulder, off to prison. So, you know, not a lifetime crim, first time problem, and the stuff that he endured while he was inside the first lodge that he lived in. After he had a shower, they used to make him go back into the shower and wash the gay off the shower before anybody else would have a shower, and that makes me feel sick when I say it out loud. You know, that kid, and he was a kid, he was only in his early 20s, had to go through that just as a result of one bad decision.
Yeah. And one decision to do a favour for his friends. And I think about my own kids and how keen they are sometimes to, you know, do things that their friends ask them to, and they sometimes show poor judgment just to fit in, and you know,
that's exactly what it was, I reckon. Oh. Poor judgment to fit in.
Yeah, God.
Yeah. And then you go into a situation where it's all men, you're getting completely bullied for this. And if you went and complained to a guard about that, very little could be done about it. And you'd get bashed up probably because you talked.
Yeah.
So what do you do? And it would be so easy for something like that to ruin somebody's life.
After the break, we hear more from Will about his surprising new life.
I think the other big message now that the book is written is that the grace that you can receive from the world if you're prepared to accept it is out there.
Mm.
Now, I was very lucky and I've been offered it a number of times when I had no right to deserve it from a friend who I hadn't talked to for 10 years offering me a job as soon as I came home, to the manager of the company I work for now saying to me, well, if you made a mistake in your past, where we're going to leave it is in your past, and let's just move forward from today. But there are enough good people out there that I really want to be one of the people that spreads that into the world, not one of the others, you know.
I think the other thing about you, though, is that you've always been very introspective, and you've always been you've always front-footed it, and you've always said, oh, I absolutely made a bad decision. I made a bad choice. I deserve to go to jail. You've never ever played victim about it. You've never said anything other than that. And I think that makes it hard for people to have a negative reaction to you. I mean, have you had any bad feedback?
Yeah, I have. Not a huge amount, though. Very little. I had a couple of people, a couple of sort of meet the author things that I've done, just small things, come and challenge me on some things, like challenge me on, did you have to pay the money back? Why didn't you have to pay the money back? Why are you blaming your ex-wife? That sort of thing.
Mm.
And my first question to him was, thanks for telling me that. Have you had a chance to read the book?
Yeah.
And if they haven't, then that's why they think that normally, because I'm pretty, like, there's no way you can read the book and think I've blamed my ex-wife
no.
or anything. Or there's, you know, but it's okay. People can have that opinion. And I know I said to you guys last time, when people come to me with that negativity, I go, ooh, is this negativity better or worse than being in jail?
Yeah.
And, you know, like we said, guess what? 99% of the time it's still better.
Yeah.
So I'll cop it. I think that's just part of the penance that you pay for having committed a crime, that some people just always think of you that way.
I can tell you, mate, I've never committed a crime and I get a lot of shit anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we live in a world where they, I think that's another thing that we need in this world right now, is just to find our sense of humour again.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't help but put humour into my story because funny stuff happens all the time. And you got to have it. I mean, they say comedy is tragedy plus time. Yeah. And I've got the time between me and the tragedy now. But I think we really need to find our sense of humour again a little bit, don't we? That it's okay to have a laugh, and it's especially okay to have a laugh at ourselves.
It's definitely, I find, a great way to tell a story. It definitely helps the medicine go down, you know. I think it always helps the message get through. It helps people to get all the way to the end of the message, I find, if you let them off the hook every now and then with some comedy, with a laugh.
That's a really nice way of putting it. And punching down's easy, I find. Like, making myself the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
But punching down's a lot. It's a lot easier to get a laugh punching down. It's a lot harder if you're trying to punch up. But there's a few stories that I didn't include because when I think about them or when I talk about them, I sound like I'm ranting.
Yeah.
And it's about punching up at the system. And, you know, I think there's a lot that's broken about our system.
That's the other thing. I never, ever got the impression from you that you thought you were better than anybody else in jail. I never got that. Yeah, and you do get that sometimes from white collar criminals.
Yeah.
That they punch down and they make a lot of fun of the guys, the uneducated guys in there. And you never do that.
No, I think that those guys that had been in for 18, 20, 25 years that were in their last 12 months, to be honest, they reminded me of my granddad. Like, he was a bit of a hard man, and he didn't ever give me a lot of advice, but he said, you know, never take a girl you want to impress to a spaghetti restaurant because she won't be able to eat without making a mess. And he said, you know, a woman that's nice to you and not nice to the waiter's not a nice woman. And he'd cuff me on the back of the ear if I deserved it. And that's what those blokes were like. You know, one of them, I accidentally called one of them a dog one day, and you don't call people that in jail.
But how do you do that accidentally, by the way?
Oh, just because that's what I'd call somebody out in the world, you know. I'd go, oh, you ate my last chip, you dog. But in prison, that's against the rules. You're not allowed to call somebody that. So he smacked me on the side of the head. And I said to him, why'd you hit me? And his first answer was, well, karma takes too bloody long. but his second answer was, I'm your friend, mate. I care about you, and you needed to learn that lesson. So I didn't hit you hard. If you had said that to somebody on the walking track out in Beechworth, you'd get walloped.
Hmm.
So learn your lesson and get on with it. Even that bloke, he didn't know me from anyone, but he took the time to care enough about me to teach me that lesson, which is why he reminded me of my granddad, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the thing. You spend 10 minutes with these people. You spend 10 minutes with prisoners like me and you go, they're just ordinary. They're just people. Yeah.
Yeah, with all the shades that we ordinary people have. Before I let you go, I have one question I have to ask. It's from the very beginning of our chat. When you say put $50 in your pocket, do you mean in the pocket of the jacket that you're going to put back on when you leave jail?
No, I don't. I mean, put $50 in your wallet, in your jeans pocket.
Yeah.
Because then when they take you downstairs to the holding cells,
yeah,
they'll say to you, what do you want us to do with this $50?
Yeah.
And you can say, put 20 of it on my phone and put 30 of it on my canteen.
Oh.
And then you've got money straight away. Because I didn't do that.
Oh.
And I went in on a Friday. And so over my first weekend, I had $3 to spend to call my son. And
okay,
the only number I had to call was his mum's mobile. So it meant I could ring once. So the advice to that lady was just put $50 in your pocket and then straight away you've got money on your phone so you can call people and tell them you're okay.
Bloody good advice.
Brilliant.
Brilliant, Will. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that you're happy and well and that the book is out and it's great. And I know that you're going to be on Conversations with Richard Feidler, yeah? Hello? Oh, it's run out of phone credit. It's $50 has run out. The book is called Mr. Ordinary Goes.
Yeah, I am.
Oh, there you are. He's gone. The book is called Mr. Ordinary Goes to Jail. It is available right now. It's by Will. I can't remember what the rest of his fake name is, but just Google it. You'll find it. Mr. Ordinary Goes to Jail. It's excellent. Thanks for listening. And thanks for being a patron, by the way.
Thank you, Anna Karlstrom, who did just that very recently. Thank you, Stephanie Love. Clockwork Raven. That is an awesome name. Scott Murdoch, Sally Davis, and Kate Anderson. Lots more extra content coming your way.
Bye for now.
Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. Thank you for downloading this episode of Australian True Crime. I seriously can't wait to get back to Australia and bring you another episode next week.